This talk was recorded at Against the Stream Buddhist Meditation Society in Los Angeles and is freely offered for your enjoyment. For more information, please visit againstthestream.org.
Maybe I'll share a few thoughts about this and then we'll open up for some conversation, some dialogue about it. It's really clear to me at this moment, at this point in my life, that each difficulty is an opportunity. And that with mindfulness practice and with an intention of living life as a spiritual practice, there's always a choice on some level or another whether or not I'm going to suffer about what's happening. And sometimes I make that choice. I think I'll suffer about what's happening. But as often as possible, turning towards the difficulties. As an opportunity and as a practice to end suffering. Through doing my best to meet whatever's happening with some equanimity, which means a sort of balanced acceptance. And a wise response. Not just a sort of doormat acceptance, but what's called for here? Compassion, forgiveness, humility, kindness. And often it's clear that what's called for is not only compassion, but it's also kind of compassion with a boundary. Compassion with a wise response that says, this really hurts, and maybe there's actually something that I can do to not perpetuate this hurt, to not continue it. Maybe there's something that I can do to remove myself from this really painful pattern or situation. Maybe I should stop drinking. Yeah, that's it. I'm an alcoholic. Oh, there's something I can do. Not take that first drink. Out of compassion. Out of mercy. If I'm honest and I look at my life, most of the most pivotal, transformative, life-changing, for the better experiences have been the most difficult. It's hardly ever been the like, oh, this is great, that led to any positive change. They're like, this really fucking sucks. I'm tired of suffering so much. What can I do? How can I start meeting the stress in my life? The fear, the anxiety, the addictive tendencies, the resistance, the anger, whatever it is that's hurting. How can I start meeting it in a way that's not going to hurt someone? And maybe hurt is the wrong word. It's not going to perpetuate more and more suffering. Years ago, I was sitting in a jail cell, strung out, facing my third felony arrest within about a year. And I thought my life was over. And I wanted to die, and I wanted to kill, and I really didn't fucking want to meditate. And that was the advice that I was given. Well, turn inward. Clearly, your life of chasing pleasure and violence and crime and drugs and didn't bring you anything but more and more suffering. Maybe there's a way to start meeting the pain that's fueling these unwise actions with some compassion. And that incredibly difficult period of my life that was the suffering that motivated me to say, okay, I'll try anything. I've stooped this low. I will even join the hippies and meditate. What do I have to lose? And turning that difficult time in my life into the beginning and the foundation and the inspiration for changing my relationship to myself and to the world. Turning that difficulty and really knowing and having some true gratitude for all of the pain that it took. And for each of us, it's different. We don't all have the same story. We all have different tolerance levels. But whatever dissatisfaction got us to the point. I have a hard time believing that anybody was just sort of happy-go-lucky and everything was great and you just thought meditation would be a good idea because life was so good already, meditation would just let you enjoy it even more. But that gratitude for whatever suffering, whatever difficulty, whatever dissatisfaction turns us towards the path. Beginning our process of training our minds and our hearts to forgive ourselves for all of the confusion, to forgive others for all of the confusion, to not look at life, not be such a victim, not be such a looking at life always as a curse or a blessing, but taking full responsibility for how we are responding. Before I started meditating, I didn't know I had any choice. I thought I just had to do whatever my mind told me to do. My mind told me to do some awful shit. With meditation, I started to realize, oh, I don't have to do whatever my mind tells me. What a relief. There's a Chinese story that fits a little bit in this sort of blessing or curse and difficulties as the path. My father tells this story. Something about a farmer in kind of rural, ancient rural China who has a small family, one son, and a small piece of land that he's farming and pushing the plow. Doesn't have any animals or anything, so the family, him and the son, they have to go out there and push the plow through the field to cultivate the rice or whatever they're cultivating. And somebody gives him a horse. And it's like, if you got a horse, that's high class. Now you can put a plow on the horse and you can get the work done in the afternoon that it would take you all week to do. Like, really luxury. You have a horse. It's like you just got a new tractor. Like, you're... And everybody in the village is saying, what a blessing. You got a horse, you're going to be rich, you're going to have a life of leisure. What a blessing, you got a horse. He said, we'll see. What a great attitude to have. Rather than incarnating, rather than taking it and being sure, yes, I got a new car, what a blessing. I got a promotion, what a blessing. I'm in a new relationship, what a blessing. We'll see. What a wise attitude, that sort of attitude of not certainty, but of wise uncertainty. We'll see. And his son is riding the horse one day, and he falls off, and he breaks his leg. And the horse kicks him off, breaks his leg. Now this elderly man has to do all of the work himself. His son's leg is broken. Everybody, the worldlings, what a curse that horse is. That horse is bad luck. What a curse. Wish you never got that horse, didn't you? Now you got to do it all. You got the horse, but you got to get out there behind it. We'll see. Seemed like a blessing. Now it seems like a curse. Couple weeks later, the army comes through, whatever dynasty at the time, scooping up all of the young men to go off to war and die, most likely. We're going to go and invade Tibet, get to work. But the son couldn't go because his leg was broken. It was in a big splint. They say, okay, well, he doesn't have to go. Everybody, what a bless that horse. What a blessing. Saved your son's life, probably. We'll see. I don't know what happened next. Something bad, something good, something bad, something good, something bad. Life, right? Something pleasant, something unpleasant. I wanted the car, I got the car, then it got scratched. And I suffered. I wanted the relationship, then I got the relationship. I suffered. I wanted out of the relationship, then I was lonely. I wanted back in another relationship. I love that the Buddha starts his teachings and the path with normalizing the difficulty of life. First truth. Let's start right here. Let's get honest, like you did tonight with each other. Let's get honest. Let's stop pretending. Living in this world where everything is changing, feeling like a blessing, feeling like a curse. This is a challenging thing. This is difficult. living in this impermanent world where everything is changing, with a body that is completely out of harmony, a mind that is completely out of harmony with reality, a mind and body that crave for stability and permanence and an excess of pleasure and an absence of pain. Do you notice that about your mind and body? Can't it just feel good all the time? We've gone to some great lengths to try to make it feel good all the time. But it's impossible. Completely and totally impossible. And the Buddha starts there. Acknowledge how difficult it is. How unsatisfactory it is to live in this place where nothing is permanent, but your mind and body crave permanence, permanent pleasure. Permanently get rid of pain. How stressful it is. And so, as I've been saying, our only choice, really, as far as I'm concerned, the only wise choice is to stop running from, to stop letting our minds run the show, or our pain run the show, or our desire run the show, or our fear, and to stop, and to turn inward, to breathe in the truth. And to start training our minds and our hearts to deal more skillfully, more wisely with reality, the way that it is, not the way we wish it were, the way that it is. I love that Buddhism doesn't present some... Well, I think actually a lot of forms of Buddhism do present some sort of fantasy about you'll just become superhuman. But I don't believe that the Buddha did that originally. A lot of Buddhism has developed over the centuries. There's more and more myth that gets added on, more and more superstition, more and more delusions that get brought in. But I think that originally the Buddha was such a pragmatists. So, you know, we can turn inward and transform our relationship to this survival instinct that keeps us in suffering through turning towards you can have happiness and ease and well-being through grieving everything that needs to be grieved. Through forgiving everything that needs to be forgiven. Through beginning to source our life from compassion rather than hatred. And this radical self-acceptance, this radical acceptance that is the beginning of that transformation. Breaking denial completely. Starting to tell the truth to ourselves, to each other. And when the difficulties arise, as they surely will, trying to gain such a transformation in our attitude that we say, oh, an opportunity. I was teaching a retreat recently with some other teachers, and I started having some conflict. Well, I had had some sort of ongoing conflict with one of the teachers, that one of my colleagues that I was working with. And as part of the conversation, I started feeling really attacked. And really reactive. And I saw the anger, and I saw the fear and the pain. And I was quite grateful for the practice and for the ability to say, oh, this is an opportunity. This is an opportunity. This is an opportunity for humility. This is an opportunity for forgiveness. This is an opportunity to tolerate the accusation and even see what part of it's true. And not do what kind of every other cell in my body wanted to do, which was attack back. And so I know how to, I can tolerate this. The practice has shown me how to tolerate pain. Has shown me how to see a bit more deeply into the pain that is being spilled out onto me, the confusion, the anger, and see, oh, they're suffering too. I was quite proud of myself. I was quite grateful that the practice had taught me these skills. Before I start tooting my horn too much, this was just recently. About a month before that, I was with another teacher and having some conflict. Sort of a pattern of mine. And I didn't react skillfully. And I got angry, and I got mean, and I got critical. And I had to make amends. And again, okay, when I woke up from the self-righteous place that I had been stuck in, I had the tools, I had the practice, I had the training. Oh, I really fucked up. I know what to do. Take full responsibility for all of the ways that I was unskillful. Say, please forgive me. You didn't deserve to be spoken to in that way. Now, the truth is, in that situation, both of these situations, the conflict is actually, real. Basically comes down to holding different views about Buddhism and teaching. And it's okay to hold a view, right? I mean, the Buddha says don't hold the fixed views. good luck. It's okay to, for me, my feeling is, in both of these situations, it's okay to hold a view. It's not okay to cause harm. That conflict where I was causing harm, I still feel like I'm right. She's delusional. It's not really the point. The point is, how did I behave? I behaved poorly. I let my suffering spill out onto another. And when I woke up to that opportunity, oh, I can make amends, I can ask for forgiveness. But in the second one, probably because I learned from that recent mistake, and I think I won't react this time. I think I'll just take it. I think I'll just hold my views less rigidly. I don't think I'll defend myself so much this time. as part of that second one, I was asked to continue a dialogue with this person. And a big part of me just felt like, no, I just want to have a boundary. I just don't want this. Right? Aversion. I'm just going to make a boundary. I don't want to deal with this. Well, this is kind of a lot of my internal was like, I've tolerated this. We can just go our own separate ways now. But I was asked to continue the relationship and the dialogue, and we're colleagues, and we don't have to, but... And I decided, oh no, this will be good practice for me. This will be practicing what I'm preaching. This will be taking this difficult situation and turning it into an opportunity, an ongoing opportunity. Actually, a safe one to practice with. I said earlier, sometimes a strong boundary is useful, and if it's really abusive and it's really, then no, you don't say, like, oh, I'll just use this as practice. Keep abusing me. I need it. But this was a very safe one to have my buttons pushed and to work with. So I encourage you, all of us, in this counter-instinctual, against-the-stream path, to consider looking at the difficulties as practice, as an opportunity to become more compassionate, more wise, more loving. His Tonglin practice has been very useful to me in this way. Different than metta. Most of you are familiar with loving kindness, with metta, where it's a constant giving. But there's Tonglin where it's this actual intentional bringing in and purifying. I've found to be incredibly useful in turning towards and embracing. And not just going immediately for antidote, for solution, but breathing it in so that the heart feels it. Compassion as the quivering of our heart in response to pain. Not an intellectual, yeah, there's lots of suffering. Feel the suffering. But don't let it overwhelm you. Try not to let it overwhelm you. And that's a danger here, right? Is that sometimes I feel like I can't handle it. It's too much. Anyways, these are some of my thoughts. What are your thoughts, questions, comments, anything? Kim, please.
Oh my God. I had an epiphany during the sitting that I have to break up with the love of my life. And then you said, and then all of a sudden during an hour, like, you're like, I don't always have to do what my mind tells me to. So I guess it's just like, I'm sort of trying to figure out what I feel is really right instead of what my mind tells me is right thing to do. That's all.
Sometimes it is that, like the Chinese parable, we'll see.
Right.
Let me sit with this for a while. Let me not impulsively make the decision. Let's see how this unfolds a little bit. Sometimes it's clear. No, it's time to, you know, like I was saying about alcoholism or something. No, it's really time to stop drinking. I don't need to continue seeing. I know for sure it's time to stop. But sometimes it's not. It's not quite that clear. And it's much more like, well, let me reflect on this. I was recently working with somebody and they were saying about how they had this epiphany and they wanted to go back and tell on a retreat. And they wanted to go back and tell their family about everything they'd figured out about how come their family's so fucked up. I figured it out. Let me go share the good news. Or the bad news. No, please don't. Sit with it for a while. Digest it fully. Before you go and try to convince anybody else. So we'll see.
To repeat it, sometimes the importance of allowing ourselves to fully breathe. And I can focus on that lately, the importance of it being that I can let go and be in a place of acceptance, sense of comfort, minimize suffering. I'm curious if you can expand on that a little bit, like there's a practice and how to encourage that.
For the most part, I believe that just being open to it is enough. That there's a great tendency to push it away, to deny it and ignore it. And just the sort of mindful turning towards and an openness to whatever's present in your heart, if it's grief, if it's joy, for the most part, I think that that's enough. Then there are practices like loving kindness and Tonglen, like this, that do seem to actually say bring it on. Psychotherapy, you know, really talking about it and unpacking the story of it. There are some things that are kind of a little bit more digging, but for the most part, just being open to it. The heart has the grief, the mind, whatever we want to call it, has a life of its own. I don't know why, I guess because I did Tonglen, I'm thinking a lot about some of the teachings that I've learned from Tibetan Buddhism. And sometimes they say, all things are self-liberating. Because of impermanence, you don't have to get rid of grief. It will come and go, it will liberate itself if you open to it. Our tendency is to meet it with aversion and then it just gets stuck. Or suppression, and then it just gets stuck. But when we open to it, it comes, and it goes, and it comes, and it goes, and it's this process and cycle that is ultimately self-liberating. If we let it, if we stop resisting, and we open to, and we turn towards. So it sounds like that's what you're doing. And then we just have to be careful for the impatience that comes in and the striving that comes in that says, okay, bring it all on right now. I want to get done with it real quick. Right? Because I'm sick of this shit. And it doesn't work that way either. Like, okay, it'll come, it'll go, it'll come, it'll go. You've heard me say the Dalai Lama's advice about progress and practice to check in on your progress with your grief. Not that wasn't what he was talking about, but... once every decade. Check in with your progress every 10 years or so. Are you more compassionate? Have you grieved more of what needs to be? Have you forgiven more of what needs to be? Take the long view on this process. Look at it in decade chunks.
Thank you. I've been waiting 18 months to come here, and from reading and practicing and being on my own and being in a city of millions and feeling alone,
even with that information, being able to come here,
I've never been able to go to a place that was a Mecca or a spiritual place. To be able to touch and just be here has taken that feeling of being alone and opened up a whole new door, set of doors that I know that are about to walk through. When I thought I walked through the last door, and I was kind of left on my own with a little bit of information and little books I can grab here and there. So I just wanted to thank you from the bottom of my heart that you opened up a whole another world to walk through. And
amen.
I've been trying to share that with other people along the way. Every time I can get a copy of the book or whatever, I'm just like, here, if you don't like it, pass it on. But I wanted to personally say thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, it's so helpful to have some community to do it with, some teachings to remind us.
Yeah, please. Well, I was wondering if you could relate to your experience as an advocate of meditation. Talked to a while ago about how meditation could really help me to not get into the body. Recently, I've been focusing more on breath, because I guess it's sort of focusing on the body. Focusing on breath,
many years and continuing, a big part of my practice with the breath has been what I was pointing to in the instructions tonight, the softening, soft belly. With each exhalation, letting go of the physical tension. Many of us find, he's talking about as he pays attention to his breath, there's this great tension he's feeling in the, sounds like in the chest up here. Many people find there's that hard ball, that rock in the stomach. We hold the fear, the anger, sometimes it's down here, sometimes it's in the chest and the throat. I found that after about a decade of softening my belly got pretty soft and rounder. And I found that actually my belly, I got almost like I conditioned because I focused there for so long, softening. And I realized I was clenching my jaw. Oh, tricky. It moved. So here now. So now my practice is during meditation. Clenching again. Oh, grinding my teeth. And just wherever, in the body, mindful, present time awareness, part of it, releasing, because clinging, clenching, is attachment. It's some sort of resistance, I'm pushing something away, I'm clinging to something, it's a physical manifestation. Stop, you know, part the whole practice, letting go. So yeah, it manifests different for different people. Some people in their back, other places in the body, but usually there's somewhere in our body that we're holding tension. And that mindfulness, part of the practice, I think, is releasing. Yeah, please.
Myself and to use my channel. I feel like you, reading your book, you dealt with a lot of that.
I used to be afraid of becoming too peaceful too, and now I'm not afraid of it anymore. Like I'm maybe I've just lost hope. But yeah, it's not as scary to me. I had this exactly, you know. I had the same sort of like, oh my God, I'm gonna start meditating. I'm gonna turn into like some sheep follower, hippie, whatever, like something that I did not want to be. And I see that actually, it doesn't change our personality much. It changes our perspective a lot. It changes how we relate to the anger. And it will lessen some of the unskillful angers and violence and some of the actions. But it doesn't change who you are. You are who you are, with your story, with your pain, with your tendencies, personality tendencies. Mostly it gets rid of the stuff that doesn't serve us, and it leaves all the good stuff. And actually it lets us find and access good stuff. We still have fun. Last one. Welcome.
You said that, you said something like, I'm not run by my mind, I'm not run by my pain, I'm not run by my memories. Then, what runs you? It's number one. You have a second question. You said that the practice helped you take the opportunity to recognize an opportunity and to indulge that opportunity instead of just reaction. How does it do that?
Let me try the first part first, and then you might have to remind me the second part. It's not run by our minds. I might have said that. The biggest change that takes place, that has taken place for me, is being able to choose, to have a relationship to what my mind and emotions are urging me to do. And to be able to choose, is this a wise thing to do or not? Sometimes it's clear that it's actually appropriate and wise, and you know, yes, there is a volitional, intentional plan, and a wise, you know, and the thought is kind of, the litmus test is like, is this going to create suffering or not? Now my mind used to tell me whatever it said, and a lot of the times whatever it was telling me to do was going to create suffering. And now I try to look at it, like in that conflict I was talking about, the first time, not wise enough to not cause suffering, to make amends for it. Second time to see, oh, what I want to do here is going to be bad karma for me and cause suffering, and it's going to, I want to hurt their feelings. So it's not that we, you know, are able to turn off the mind, but changing our relationship to it and getting more in harmony with, is this the wise thing to do?
So it's not the mind that's making that choice. What's making that choice?
Of whether or not to...
Yeah.
I don't know. I could say it's mindfulness. But what's that? Some level of... It's something about our consciousness. Some level, something about awareness. And maybe it is actually the mind, training the mind, and choosing what aspects of the mind to obey and which ones not to. Our brain, our mind, which is more than just the brain, I think that maybe definition of the mind is some combination of the brain interacting with the other sense doors in the body, in the nervous system. So it's not just the brain when I say mind. It's a process. And there's a term in, sometimes we would make a kind of duality and say, well, I'm coming from the heart now, rather than the mind. Although I think that that's an artificial duality. The Buddha used a word called citta in the ancient language, in the Pali language, and it translated as heart and mind. So sometimes we in Buddhism, we talk about bodhicitta, the awakened heart and mind, the compassionate and wise aspect of heart, mind. It's still part of the mind. It is still the mind relating to the mind, but it's the wise part of the mind relating to the unwise part of the mind. Sometimes these get externalized in characters, and often I think that it becomes the duality between God and the devil. God is the wisdom, the devil is the ignorance. In Buddhism, the way that I practice it, both of those, the God and the devil, are aspects of our mind. Brahma, God, in the Buddhist terminology, the Brahma Viharas, the wise, enlightened qualities of heart and mind. Compassion, kindness, appreciation, and equanimity. When I'm sourcing my relationship to the mind from those wise places, from compassion, from kindness, then I don't get in too much trouble. Mara is greed, hatred, and delusion. The devil. When I'm sourcing my actions and my decisions based on greed, based on hatred, delusion, it's hard, right? Because when you're deluded, you don't know it. It's the nature of delusion. But you're pretty, you know, if you're paying attention at all, you know when you're greedy and you know when you're hateful. So it's maybe that simple. It is the mind, it's some aspect of the mind, the bodhicitta, the sometimes in Buddhism they would call it the Buddha nature, that there's some wise aspect within us. New Age circles might say it's sourcing your life from your heart. But it's tricky, right? Because it is. It's still the mind relating to the mind. But it's the wise intentions versus the unwise ones.
Can I ask for a clarification on what
you're
saying? Sure. So is this at the level of impulse? Or is it something that's more detached and observational? Is it a wise impulse versus whatever its opposite is? Or is it something that you're catching and you're filtering in terms of what you're trying to just sort of communicate now?
It feels to me like a lot of my practice has been catching and filtering. Although in moments it feels like and more in the later years of practice, it feels actually like some of my impulses are wise. It felt like in the beginning, all of my impulses were unwise. I never had many impulses to like just be generous. It was like, what can I get? That over the years, it does feel like there's become more impulses towards wise actions.
And I think that's the real challenge, is in our society, we are expected to react impulsively. We're expected to have a reaction almost immediately. And it takes time to
filter,
take time out,
train,
take that
yeah.
pause,
yeah.
and consider how you're going to react, whether yeah. you're going to react skillfully or unskillfully.
Yeah.
And that's what most people don't do.
Yeah. Yeah, that's mindfulness practice. And it doesn't take that much time once you develop the habit of paying attention. But it's not like a 5-minute process. It's just like, can I pay attention to what's happening in here? I love this conversation, and thank you for the question. I don't think I got to the second part. Thank you for both of your comments, but we are out of time. I'm sorry if I didn't get to anybody's. Bunch of upcoming events. We have George Haas doing some stuff. We have Tanisaro Biko, one of the Buddhist monks in the Thai forest tradition, is going to be here next month. Check them out, upcoming classes. One of the things that Mary and I are just starting to plan as a fundraiser for the center is a silent art and stuff auction. and we're going to have a party, and we're going to have food and maybe some music, and then we're going to fill up the place with stuff that you want. Feed on your greed and your craving. So, but before we get to the what you want, what do you want to give? What is the wise impulse in you? That maybe there's something from your business that you would donate. Maybe there's something from your band. Maybe you're an artist and your art doesn't suck and you would like to donate something. That's mean, huh? And you would like to maybe, you know, maybe there's somebody that you know that has something, you know, that they would like to donate, and then we're going to, you know, do a silent auction and have a party. And we did it for a friend of ours a couple years ago who had gotten a motorcycle accident, and all kinds of people donated stuff, and they made like $8,000 that time we did that. And so if we could raise that kind of money, the center could really use it. So think about what you might offer that people might want to purchase. Doesn't have to be really expensive. It can be cheap. So please think about that. And I guess see Mary or me. We'll probably need some volunteers and a committee to help us with this. If you know you're interested in helping with the silent auction, see Mary. She'll put you to work.
When is this? And get on the email list because we'll send out emails.
Sounds like we're going to do it in mid-September. And get on the email list so you know about it. Can be anything from like, you know, professional massage, no happy endings, to, you know, a piece of art, your new iPhone 4, you just don't like it, you want to donate it. Yes?
I was just going to, I've done a similar, and things that go really well in this sort of setting are spiritual books that you have finished reading. So if you
books. Cool. Thank you. That's it. We also want some of your money. Those two bowls, there's one on the desk, one on the podium there. We appreciate donations. We don't charge a set fee for the class because we feel that nobody should be excluded because of lack of financial abundance. But it costs a lot to run the center. Some of the money comes to support me as a teacher, Mary as the director. We're the employees here, and then the lease and insurance and all of that stuff. So be as generous as feels appropriate to you. We suggest $15. If that feels appropriate, we're grateful. If more feels like appropriate, we're grateful. If less feels appropriate, we're grateful. So whatever feels good to you, please make an offering if you can in one of those bowls. I'll be gone next week. I'll be back the week after. Who's teaching next week? Not sure yet. Special guest. Yes. May any goodness that comes from our practice be shared outward in all directions, bringing about a positive change to this whole world.
You have just listened to a podcast from Against the Stream Buddhist Meditation Society. If you'd like to make a contribution to help support these teachings, please visit againstthestream.org.